They do it late at night when their parents are asleep. They do it in restaurants and while crossing busy streets. They do it in the classroom with their hands behind their back. They do it so much their thumbs hurt. That was the opening to a New York Times article recently about texting. Dr. Michael Lacks is a professor in family medicine and the medical director of the Occupational Health Clinical Center at Upstate. We've asked him to help us sort out the potential problems this new apparent addiction has on kids and their families. Good morning, Dr. Lacks.
Good morning.
Let's start by explaining what texting is.
Well, texting is you...
You use your cell phone.
Right. Use your cell phone to send messages that are typed with your, usually with your thumbs.
Right, right. So instead of speaking into the phone, mostly kids, but adults as well, are using their phones and those keypads.
That's right.
Yep. And for a while there, it seemed like you only had the 9 numbers and they had to put the alphabet on the numbers, much like they do on a telephone. But now we see the phones that have entire keypads on them.
That's right. And, you know, I'm amazed. I watched my daughter do it, and she is so fast.
Yes.
And I've tried it, and it's like, I can't even get my fingers on the right keys.
I know. My fingers are way too fat, and my nails are way too long. But let's talk about it, because it is creating some problems, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I told my daughter yesterday, I said, you got to listen to this radio program, because I'm going to go on and sound like an old fogey talking about this. But, I mean, for a while, you know, people have been concerned about the physical aspect, which is the you know, the use of the thumbs mainly to do it, and what the short-term and long-term effects of that are, because you know, pretty much anything you do like that repetitively on a keyboard carries, I think, some risk of problems, either short-term or maybe even long-term.
Well, I look at the kids mostly, and I've texted, and it works out pretty well, but they grip this tiny little thing, and then they're using their thumbs in this very confined space, and they're sending these messages back and forth, and the numbers here are incredible. They said, according to Nielsen, American teenagers sent and received an average of 2,272 text messages per month in the fourth quarter of 2008. That's astounding.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. And when you watch the kids, I mean, you see how they do it. And it's going on all the time, you know. And I thought what was interesting about that article was not just that it mentioned the physical aspects, but also sort of what the sort of consequences may be mental health-wise and culturally, too, which I think may actually be more profound than the direct thumb things.
Well, let's cut to those in a minute. Let's talk about the physical first, because okay. I'm concerned that if these kids are doing this repetitive stress, is this going to lead to maybe more arthritis down the road when they're adults? You're the person who works in occupational health. Tell us what the long-term ramifications could be.
Well, my bet is that, you know, I think even the article mentioned that kids are already experiencing a thumb problems, mostly probably tendonitis and soft tissue issues with their thumbs, and probably it'll have a name, you know, texting thumb.
Probably.
Or if it doesn't already. But I think, yeah, long-term, that's a concern, is what's the long-term impact going to be on the joints, and will arthritis increase as a result? And I think it's reasonable to think that, yeah, it could be a risk for that.
It could be. So perhaps they'll come along with some kind of adaptation that can be used so that these kids won't get these repetitive stress. Maybe like their voices. But in any case, now let's talk about some of the mental and emotional, because the article did mention there are some real, they said during adolescence, this is the time that kids are supposed to be coming independent and breaking away from their parents, and yet they find that an awful lot of these text messages are going back and forth with mom. Should I buy the red shoes or the blue shoes?
Yeah, right. I think it's also not with both the parents and with their comrades,
right? Their circle of friends.
Uh-huh. That it's really, I mean, it's a constant interruption. I mean, the kids are always, basically, they're like always on call, and mm-hmm. so they're always ready to receive a text or send a text. And so the ability to sort of sit and think and sort of get deeply into something, including sleep,
is
always sort of potentially interrupted. And so I think that raises questions about sort of how, you know, what's going to happen in terms of, you know, sort of brain functioning, the way kids think, the way kids do things mentally.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's when you say they're always on, I mean, literally, even in the classrooms, I mean, how do you stop, unless you take phones away, when you take away the instrument, then they're in class, they're not paying attention in class, so they're missing out on some of their schoolwork. They're missing out on their sleep, because these things are going off all night long. And yes, parents have to step up to the plate and make sure that at least when the kids are home, they're regulating some of it. Otherwise, I can't even imagine what attention spans are going to evolve to if kids don't learn to focus on their work.
Yeah, I mean, it's a constant, I look at it sort of like an arms race. It's sort of like, you know, the parents or the teachers think of some way to try and control it, the kids figure out some way to get around it, then the parents come back with some further control measures. So yeah, I mean, it's, and you know, you watch them and we say, you know, you can't do this at the dinner table while we're eating,
right?
For example.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, they got the phone with them, and then every once, you know, occasionally when they think they're not looking, they're like, you know, they got their hands under the table doing it.
Texting, so, anyway.
And the article mentioned that the teachers, you know, have a really hard time controlling this,
yes,
in the classroom. And so what's the impact on, you know, learning and paying attention and all that?
Exactly. And then they find the same thing like in business meetings, you know, where big important decisions are being made and people are over there texting instead. So it really is something, and I agree with you, it's something that they're going to have to look at regulating, something they're going to have to look at some kind of alternative to make sure that even though it's a great tool, and it can be a great tool, that there are going to somehow be ways of diminishing the effect on other parts of their lives. Well, Dr. Michael Axe, thank you so much for coming by this morning. We'll see what texting evolves to.
Right. Thanks.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. Monkey see, monkey won't do, but kids will. Or my kids call me Bub. Well, dear tutors, the other day I was standing around my office reading some new research about how kids over-imitate adults. Over-imitate, you say? What does that mean? Well, that's what I said. Well, the researchers had little kids try to open a special box with a toy inside. They needed to manipulate some doohickey this way or that before opening the lid. Some succeeded, some didn't. Then the researchers had a familiar grown-up from the kid's own cultural group show him how to open it, but adding in a totally superfluous flourish. Don't you love how that sounds? Superfluous flourish. Anyway, a totally unnecessary step of running a blue feather over the box before yanking the lid. The kids added in the feather bit, even if they'd already opened it before without the feather. When the researchers, however, tried this with monkeys, they skipped the feather and just got the job done. Conclusion? This may be how some of human culture gets passed along, even if it doesn't make sense or is downright destructive, like smoking or hitting our kids. Now, didn't my son come home from college the other day? And we're talking about his train trip and how it went, and he suddenly says, "And oh yeah, Bub." They call me Bub from Bubba Louie, which they started after watching Abbott and Costello, if I remember right. Anyway, oh yeah, Bub, I keep finding myself doing more and more things like you do. I can't stand it. Like on the train, I started making faces and playing peekaboo with this little baby. It used to drive me crazy when I watched you do it. So we laughed about how horrible it is discovering yourself turning into your parents. Yeah, right. He went on. And how you cheated us at cards when we were little, like setting the deck up when we went to the bathroom to give you all the clobber cards in Uno, and then after you clobbered us, fessing up and laughing like a wild man. Hey, how about we try that with Mom tonight? Or Bub, when you made believe you could open the car window just by doing that elaborate wave and point thingy and saying, "Open sesame." And then we tried it, and you made it work for us, too, and told us it was just magic. Why did you do those things? Was your dad a jokester, too? Yeah, and it was just fun. And boy, do I feel lucky, folks, because gobs of research since then shows a warm, positive relationship with our kids helps them open the door to lifelong happiness and success. So maybe waving that blue feather of fun in a seemingly superfluous flourish makes great sense after all. I'm Dr. Rich, the great Bubba Louie O'Neill. Thanks for tuning in.